She was told the sea was no place for a woman, so she cut her hair, stole a ship, and ruled the sea instead. Grace O'Malley raided castles, kidnapped nobles, dismissed her husband after 1 year, and gave birth at sea, and just fought pirates on the same day, you know. This remarkable woman bowed to no man, and she even refused to kneel before a queen. She was a pirate, a warlord, a diplomat, and an outlaw. This is the true story of the woman who ruled the Atlantic and negotiated with empires at cannon point. Blind History is brought to you by Vitruvius Design. Visit them at vitruviusdesign.co.za. It is time for another episode of Blind History, and this is unbelievable. We've almost done our 10 episodes for the season already, and there are so many more people on our list of people that we have to get to. But today, we thought we'd focus on a famous woman in history, not because we care about being equal opportunity offenders, but because this woman is unstoppable. She was unbelievable, and she was absolutely probably one of the most dangerous people in the whole world. At a certain time, I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and fellow history enthusiast, Anthony Miederer. And Anthony, of course, is also the CEO of a company called Vitruvius Design, which is something that you need to check out. They're the sponsor of this show, so support them, please, and go and find out what they're up to, particularly if you are interested in getting some extraordinarily high finishes for your bathrooms and kitchens. These are the things that that Anthony does in his spare time when he's not reading history books. Is that right, Ant?
That's exactly right. Yeah. I'll spend a little bit of time on it.
Yeah, you know, you managed to apportion your hobby time to the business, but your real love is history.
Yeah, exactly. It's the 80-20 rule. So.
Well, I don't know how you... I don't know how you feel. You were saying, sorry?
80% of my time in history.
Exactly. All right, so let's talk about Grace O'Malley. I'll be honest with you, didn't know a lot about this this person, but I'd heard the name, and I think it must have come from reading lots of books about Tudor history. But Grace O'Malley was born in 1530 in Ireland, and she probably became one of the most famous pirates, privateers, warlords in Renaissance Europe.
Yeah, but when you actually read the story of Grace O'Malley, she was just so much more than that. She was actually in a time where there was another very powerful woman across the seas. The Tudor Queen Elizabeth I, or across the Irish Sea, let's say. And she was a pirate, exactly like you say, and a rebel, but also shrewd, very, very shrewd, tactically very on a political side, astute and a trailblazer, let's say.
I mean, she was born into a family of you could call it nobility, Gaelic chieftainship, but she was the daughter of a maritime lord, so shipping was really in her blood from an early age, and she was raised in this seafaring clan, you could probably call it. They controlled all kinds of shipping routes along the Atlantic coast. And let's not for a moment persuade ourselves that this was all above board and legal. Basically, the sea was, you know, no man's land or all man's land, and you could make up your rules. It was anarchy out there, particularly in this age, because although navies were becoming a thing, of course, the Spanish Armada, the most famous navy of this period, the Armada from Philip II that invaded England and tried to throw Elizabeth I off her throne. But besides these huge nation states, it was a free-for-all, right?
Yeah, it was definitely a free-for-all. I think that was by no means legal, like you said, Gareth, but it was honorable. I think that if you look at Elizabeth I, she had a horde of pirates supporting her, and as long as they were marauding the enemy, which they did very well. I mean, Sir Francis Drake, which is probably one of the great mariners in history, was very close to Queen Elizabeth. And maybe, you know, Queen Elizabeth supposedly was well, she never got married, let's say, and they were quite close, let's say. But so yes,
are
it,
you,
it was an honorable.
Are you inferring that Queen Elizabeth the First was beneath the honor that history has esteemed her with?
Well, I'm not sure what her needs were from day to day. So, and she had to work fast with all the mercury was something that she put on her skin. So,
yeah, so she had that's to right.
Work. Yeah, but talking about that, I think it was an honorable trade. I think and what Grace's dad did well was almost like the mafia have done in the 21st century. Is anybody fishing was like called like a black rent. So they were right on the coastline and they had the castles there and they would and they had their ships and anybody traversing those waters needed to pay them rent. You know, otherwise they would pillage them or knock them, you know, take them out or sink their boat. So that a lot of the income was done by that. And I think as well that they did also beach the boats because they were designed on the ex-Viking boats with very shallow depth and so they could maneuver in areas where the water wasn't that deep. And they used to go take cows because I think that was the currency actually in Ireland at the time were cattle. And they used to load them up on the ships and then move off.
Yeah, you could say that this was extortion of a kind because if they, you know, if you wanted to travel along the coast of Ireland, which was sparsely inhabited, let's put it that way, and very poorly controlled by the central government, if there was any. You know, around this time, it was chaotic. There were a lot of English interests in Ireland, but largely it was tribal. And these guys would come along in their essentially Viking longboats and they'd take what they wanted and or extort money from you. And you had to pay as a protection racket. I mean, you're quite right to compare them to the mob.
And I think they were very successful, but you know, the downfall of Ireland at the time, and I think this is a critical time in the history of Ireland when the Tudors took over England, Henry VIII was less adamant about what happened in Ireland, but slowly but surely his daughter Mary and definitely his other daughter Elizabeth, they really wanted to take total control. And so during Grace's time, she experienced extremely difficult life, constantly trying to look after her ancestral lands and to keep the English, let's just say the English at bay, and to a large extent helping, you made brief mention of the Spanish Armada that was coming in to take over and to overthrow Elizabeth. They were friendly to them. So it was a difficult time, but the challenge came in is that the tribes or the clans used to fight against each other. I mean, they saw the clan across the river as just as a bigger enemy as the English. So that was a little bit their downfall, and they were quite divisive in that way.
It almost sounds to me like you're a little bit of a Grace O'Malley sympathizer. You kind of you prefer the lawless pirate queen than you do the order and sophistication of the Tudors from Henry VII on.
Well, undoubtedly. Absolutely undoubtedly. He was a fiery redhead.
Yeah, well, I mean, who could resist that? All right, so here we go. Let's just look at a few facts from her reign. Some people would say reign of terror. But she took command of ships and crews while she was in her teens, which, of course, was very rare for a woman, especially at this time. You didn't have women parading around on ships. In fact, most sailors thought it was very unlucky to have women on board. She operated as a pirate, so they would actively steal from other vessels and take them down. They would be privateers. You could hire them to escort your fleet of ships or to guard treasure you were bringing across from the continent or famous prisoners, people that you needed to protect. She could also be, the landlocked clan leader when she decided to. And that depended on what the political winds were. You said earlier that she was quite a strategic political maneuverer. And I think that's exactly right. And you had to be in those days because just like a sailor has to read the wind in order to know where to sail, quite you know, similarly, I suppose you could say that as a political operator at that time, you had to know who your friends were and you had to be willing to make new friends on a dime and essentially turn your loyalties around.
100%. And Gareth, when we talk about her beginnings, so first of all, it's always difficult, again, you know, in history, who's writing the stories. But it seemed like she had a happy childhood in all intents and purposes, her mom and dad. And her dad was a pirate, just like she and it would end up to be. And he was called Black Oak, obviously in a Gaelic word, Owen O'Malley. And I think that the big thing with him, so she was feisty. And she said, "I'm coming on the boats with you." And no, you're not. And you know, I am. And, "Oh, but you can't because your hair's going to get tied up in the ropes." So she said, "Well, I'll just cut my hair off." And she apparently did. And then they gave her the nickname Bald. Or it could be a folklore story told around the fires. She was very popular. But definitely she wanted to get on that boat with Dad. And you know, some of the stories of those beginning raids, if people needed to be killed, she didn't shirk from that either, you know. So she was definitely an O'Malley, as people often said.
Yeah, I mean, I just picture this buxom, fearsome Irish warrior on a ship with her head shaved, bald, and screaming. And apparently she had a foul mouth. You know, she would swear and curse at people. She spoke Latin, and she also spoke Irish or Gaelic. But she was terrifying. I mean, I don't think for very many people it was a pleasant encounter when you found Grace O'Malley, whether she was in a good mood or bad.
But Gareth, the other thing is that, you know, when you look at later on the pirates, you know, 100 years later, I think it's Anne Bonny. There's a few, and we've covered them in one of our previous Blind Histories. And she, they tried to be men, you know, acting in it was a very male-driven world, as you know. Sure. She didn't care. She didn't hide the fact that she was a woman. There was nothing to that extent. She went out there. She wasn't hiding at all. Whatever was practical for her.
It's also probably worth mentioning a couple of other things. So she married and married twice. There's some interesting things about these guys. The first guy she married was Donal O'Flaherty, and he was a member of another powerful clan. They had three children together. And when her husband was killed in an ambush, she took control of his territory as well as hers, defended a castle at Rockfleet, which became her headquarters, and refused to fade into widowhood. She became much, much more powerful after this marriage than she had been before. So definitely not shy to take on extra responsibilities. She wasn't going to be, happily ensconced in her ship, just doing a little piracy here or there. She was also going to take his castle and make sure she defended her lands there.
Yeah, and I think in all intents and purposes, she increased her wealth with this marriage, and it was strategic. Mm-hmm. Her dad died, and then he, like you said, he got killed. They had three children together, which those children play a big role in her life later on. But in all the relationships she was definitely the stronger one. And he was apparently her first husband had quite a wild temper, but he couldn't keep up with her. She was just insane. And and then after he died, and I think that she moved on quite quickly because I think it was he died, and then she had a boyfriend a couple of months later. Then she got remarried the next year. So I think she was definitely on the move. Everything had its place and purpose, but. This apparently she had an affair with a shipwreck guy, and he just promptly he got murdered. So then she murdered them. So she found them, and then she came out. So she, I think she liked to even the scales. She definitely liked the adage of an eye for an eye.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to take out her boyfriend by mistake. Her second marriage, and by the way, the child, one of the children in that first marriage, was actually born on a ship at sea, and she went fighting virtually straight afterwards. I mean, she was climbing the mast. She'd just given birth to a kid that morning, and that afternoon she was already in full pirate mode, commanding the seas.
Yeah, exactly. It was the Algerian, the North African pirates that often used to come around those areas, and she was downstairs giving birth, and they would say, "Oh, we're in trouble. Yeah, we can't do without you. Please come." And then she mentioned something, moaned a bit, and then she apparently she had to go and save the day.
Yeah, she's like, "Just give the kid to the wet nurse. I'll be back just now."
Exactly. No, yeah. 100%. And Tibbot, the son that was born on the boat, again, played a large role. I mean, she was so protective of her clan and her family. If you just look at everything, she does everything. In the end, we'll talk a little bit about, the English kidnapping or murdering her eldest, and how she actually in the end went to Queen Elizabeth, which is very famous. It's recorded in English history. You know, it's because often the Gaelic historians were trying to shy away from roles that women play in society, and so often, or I think a lot of what she was about was erased, and it came out in folklore rather than actual history. And whereas the English history recorded definitely the engagement with Queen Elizabeth I.
So this child that you mentioned, and we will get into his story in a moment, but this Tibbot or Theobald, the Long or of the Ships, those were his nicknames. He was the one son that she had with her second husband, who was a guy called Richard Iron Bork. And they were married under ancient Irish law. So some people weren't entirely convinced it was a legal marriage, but they were married for 1 year. And at the end of the year, she apparently declared, she just walked up to him and said, "Richard Bork, I dismiss you." Which, you know, people often joke about Henry VIII, who'd come just a few years earlier and had to go to the trouble of having two of his wives' heads cut off and having two divorces. Clearly, for her, it was a whole lot easier. And you know, again, for people who believe history is just this really patriarchal story of male dominance, well, here's a woman who clearly, even in the matter of her marriage, was not going to be commanded by any man.
Oh, 100%. And he obviously came from a powerful clan himself. And I think that the big thing, again, is some clans went and sided with the English. Some said, "Let's fight it through." And there was grey. It was definitely grey with her husband. And she was so clear, Gareth. This is what I really liked about her. She was stubborn to a T, exactly what she wanted to try and achieve. He was just collateral.
Vitruvius Design is for people who demand more than disposable design. It's for homeowners, architects, and developers who believe quality should last for decades, not seasons. Inspired by classical Roman principles, strength, usefulness, and beauty, Vitruvius curates premium European bathroom and kitchen fittings engineered to endure and designed to age gracefully. Every piece is accredited, rigorously tested, and backed by a 15-year warranty. Explore the collections at vitruviusdesign.co.za or visit the Vitruvius Design showroom in De Waterkant, Cape Town, opening January 2026. She maintained a whole bunch of strongholds along the coast. We mentioned Rockfleet Castle, and led land and sea battles well into her own middle age. She also kidnapped rivals for ransom, including a whole lot of Elizabeth I's English officials, and fought off an attack more than once, even when pregnant and later on just having given birth. But she used to have the knife between the teeth. She'd climb up the rigging. She would command from the poop deck, the quarter deck, and the central part of the ship. She was all over the place all the time, and I try to picture, whenever we talk about anyone in blind history, I try to picture like a day in the life of these people, and there's really very little difference between someone like Grace O'Malley and the great warrior kings that we've mentioned in episodes before this. Just this fearless self-confidence, an ability to turn and face just about any challenge. It's a remarkable story. Now, in her 60s, you said that she sailed to England and she met with Queen Elizabeth. How did that go down?
Well, I think in all intents and purposes, her behavior was true to her soul. So she and again, we talk folklore, but she didn't bow to the Queen. She said, "You're not my Queen. I'm not going to bow to you." And I think we know Elizabeth very well from what we've read. And, I'm a big fan of Elizabeth. She was, I'm not going to say easygoing, but she didn't sweat the small stuff. So she didn't really care. And she was intrigued by this powerful lady from the East and from the West. And then as well, she had a bit of a sniffle and they gave her this lace, this handkerchief. And afterwards she threw it in the fire, which should be seriously frowned upon. But she said, we don't keep those things, as bad for hygiene. So she wasn't, I think that's what I'm trying to say. Yes, she wasn't a wilting violet in front of Queen Elizabeth, that's for sure. But I think that essentially what she's saying is, you guys have killed this idiot Bingham, and we maybe can highlight there's this guy, Richard Bingham, who's just absolutely hates her and spends his life tracking her, imprisoning her, killing her children. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. She basically said, look, this guy's got a vendetta against me. What I'm prepared to do, please release my son. I will fight in your name. Also, please return all my lands. Bingham has got it for his own gain and for his own profit. And she agreed. She agreed. She released her son, and in all intents and purposes, gave approval to give all her lands back. But sadly, Bingham and his cronies didn't execute what Queen Elizabeth had said. So it wasn't as clear a year later as it was that day in the meeting. But what an incredible meeting. I think that they're both the definitely Queen Elizabeth was very impressed with Grace.
She was a bit of a constant thorn in England's side, though. They were always trying to control Ireland and get more and more centralized power working there. And she fought and negotiated with English authorities throughout that time and also supported the Irish resistance during the 9 Years' War. She was more pragmatic than ideological, so it really depended on how it would benefit her, whether she'd support or not. And she was never fully subdued, either by the English or by this Bingham chap, and always negotiated from a position of strength, which, you know, from a business point of view, is the only way to negotiate. If you negotiate from any other position, people just do not take you seriously.
Yeah, I agree. Always hold the longer end of the stick. You know, I think that sort of should be the adage. But she had a massive reputation, and when they were quite nervous when she came to the Queen and she had a dagger in her dress, and they weren't sure. Apparently, this was a fancy dress. It was a Greenwich castle. I'm not sure if you call it castle, but I think you've been there, Gareth. I've been there. It's an incredible sight. South of London on the Thames. She came in there. Right. Apparently, she wore this fancy dress. If you can imagine, she's normally wearing a pirate rig. And she apparently had a dagger. And she said it was for my own defense. And Elizabeth then just laughed. But this vendetta with this Bingham guy, ultimately in the end, he was imprisoned. He got his comeuppance finally. But I mean, she really, really had a tough life. She had to fight for her ancestral land. She never really had, let's say, ownership of her ancestral lands. The English just got stronger and stronger in the region. A lot of the clans that were told to them, they jumped ship and they went to the English side, so they became earls. One of the earls was Earl Essex, who was very close to Queen Elizabeth. So it just became very complicated, Gareth. I think that in her dad's time, when she was sailing the high seas with her dad, pillaging and kidnapping when they received the ransom money, they shot the person anyway because it was a lot of fun. All was happy in the world. and then suddenly the English came.
Yeah, yeah. They ruined all their fun. Amazing. The English, and I'm going to quote here from what they recorded. They recorded that she was a woman that hath never yet bent her knee to authority. And she became, as you've already indicated, a bit of a folk hero while she was alive. You know, normally people's legend only begins once they've died. But while she was alive, and possibly during the time she was an outlaw, she was already revered all over and very famous. She could go to places, and just by seeing her ship coming near, people knew, oh my God, that's Grace O'Malley. And they'd line up. She was a celebrity.
100%. And I think, Gareth, today, there's a lot that's spoken about her. They're trying to erase what was erased by the Gaelic historians, let's say. There's a statue of her in her, I suppose you would call it provinces. I'm not sure what they call it today. There's many, many books written about her, and plays, television shows. I'm happy that people are, she's getting the relevance she deserves.
I think it's also probably a good idea to just tell people, if you do want to explore the legacy of Grace O'Malley, we do know where she's buried. She's buried on Clare Island, which is a site that she used to rule and fortified. She died in 1603 at Rockfleet Castle. It's actually the same year that Queen Elizabeth I died. Mm. So these two extraordinary, powerful women who had met each other head-to-head to have a negotiation about what would happen in Ireland, both ended up dying in the same year. She's going to go down in history, is already written into the annals of history as the most famous pirate in Ireland. And really, for many women, a symbol of kind of women's sovereignty, resistance, audacity, and someone who just never, as the English said, bent the knee.
Never bent the knee. And also, she was also a daughter and a wife two times over, as you mentioned, and the mother of four children who she loved and looked after them like you cannot believe. In all intents and purposes, grandmother. She was the true matriarch of the O'Malley clan. It'd be interesting to see the history of post her of the clan.
Yeah, I wonder what happened, whether the O'Malleys, who have that surname today, could trace their ancestry to this great woman. Mm. But definitely one of the more swashbuckling, adventurous people we've managed to cover on Blind History, and someone who actually, I can't believe it's taken us this long to get to, but then I probably will end up saying that about a lot of people.
Yeah, it was absolutely great. This is one person I really loved exploring.
Blind History is brought to you by Vitruvius Design. Visit them at vitruviusdesign.co.za.